From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on September 27th, 2024. In a programming note, we'll be dropping our next pod later on Tuesday in observance of Mayon Schechter's wedding this weekend. Happy wedding day, Mayon and Daniel. Actually, the delay is to accommodate AT, but it's no longer, but we're still going to do it anyway. I have things planned. If it's our Saturday pod, this one, that means we're on the presidential campaign trail with highlights from both Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. We also have some analysis from Winthrop University political science professor Scott Huffman.
Shout out.
And the Democratic National Committee is sending tens of thousands of dollars to the state in hopes of flipping back some statehouse seats. One thing that will never flip is our need for you to call 803-563-7169. It is a never-ending need. But give us a shout. Let us know how you dealt with Tropical Storm Helene. She really kind of did a number on us, didn't she, folks? Unexpected, unlike Debbie. Why couldn't she be more like Debbie Helene? But let us know, 803-563-7169. Also, we're talking spookiness in the wind down, so stay tuned. Mark your calendars. Tuesday at 9 p.m., SCETV and South Carolina Public Radio will be simulcasting the CBS News vice presidential debate between Republican Ohio Senator J.D. Vance and Democratic Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. We'll also bring you a pod on Wednesday of highlights. I'm saying that right now. Sure, why not? Sure. You guys want that? We'll do it. There's going to be so much from that debate that we're going to have a separate pod like we do. Now, the Democratic National Committee announced on Friday an additional investment in South Carolina ahead of the 2024 election thanks to record fundraising. We're talking about a, quote, high five-figure investment, quote, is for a staffer that will focus on get-out-the-vote efforts for legislative races in the state. Now, you know, South Carolina, unlike its neighbors to the north and south, is not a swing state, and there are no statewide races on the ballot this November. But all 124 state house and 46 Senate seats are up for re-election this year, as well as the 7 congressional seats. Only a handful of these races are competitive, and Republicans are looking to maintain and possibly grow their supermajorities in both chambers. Democrats, however, are trying to retake 4 House seats in Greenwood, Clarendon, Charleston, and Hampton counties that Republicans flipped in 2022. Jamie Harrison, former South Carolina Democratic Party chairman turned DNC chair, is fully aware of the challenges Democrats face in the state and sees this investment as a boost. In a statement, he said, quote, with Vice President Harris at the helm and record-breaking investments in coordinated campaigns, the DNC and Democratic state parties across the country have the momentum to strengthen coordinated operations in the critical final stretch to November to deliver wins for Democrats and all South Carolinians, quote. Now, Harris has brought in record amounts of money in her first full month at the top of the ticket. The campaign raised $361 million in August and has $404 million on hand per federal filings. The Trump campaign raised $130 million in August and is reported to have $295 million in cash on hand at the end of the month. That's still a lot of money, folks. Now, Bloomberg, so much money that Bloomberg reports that the Harris campaign spent $7.5 million a day on average in August compared to $2.6 million a day for the Trump campaign. That's a lot, guys. Now, this latest investment by the DNC represents $2.5 million to both traditionally red and blue states to, quote, strengthen coordinated campaigns and boost Democratic wins in down ballot races, according to the Dems. For South Carolina Democratic Party Chairwoman Crystal Spain, she said, quote, South Carolina Democrats have spent the last few months executing a very targeted campaign strategy in an effort to win legislative seats. The DNC's investment is critical to our success in November, quote. Now, with this, the DNC said it is their first election cycle. They have sent funding and resources to all 57 states and territories. If it's our Saturday pod, that means we're catching you up with some of the big moments from the presidential campaign trail. Are you still listening?
Yes.
Former President Donald Trump has not pulled his endorsement of embattled North Carolina Republican gubernatorial candidate, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, in light of CNN's damning report of comments Robinson allegedly made on a pornographic website years ago, in which he called himself a black Nazi and praised slavery, among other disturbing statements. North Carolina is a critical state for Trump. Trump was in our other neighboring swing state, Georgia, remember, tomato, South Carolina, where he proposed massive tariffs on Chinese imports, as well as a 10% tariff on products from the rest of the world. That is, unless a tweet or off-the-cuff remark has changed the concepts of this plan, well, economists say it will drastically increase financial burdens on all Americans and spark trade wars. But Trump, who was on stage with two teleprompters, said this to the crowd.
Isn't it nice, by the way, to have a president that doesn't need a teleprompter?
He also proposed a 10% interest rate cap on credit cards.
And while working Americans catch up, we're going to put a temporary cap on credit card interest rates at 10%. We have no choice. They're getting 22, 25%. We can't let people have to pay 25% and 22% interest because they can't afford to pay off their credit card. We're going to cap it for a period of time at 10%.
I'm sure the shareholders of Visa, MasterCard, and American Express are stoked about that one. And Trump also blamed Harris for the illegal immigrants causing crime and taking jobs, though there are plenty of jobs in the strong American economy, and crime statistics do not back that up. Here is Trump in Savannah on September 24th.
Kamala's illegals are also crushing your wages and stealing your jobs. Last month alone, think of this, American-born workers lost 1.3 million jobs and migrants gained 635,000 jobs. So we're putting our migrants to work at a much higher level than our own people, our own citizens. So as we create millions of new manufacturing jobs here in Georgia and nationwide, we will make sure that these jobs go to American citizens, not illegal citizens, people that came into our country illegally. Your wages will rise, your costs will fall, your job opportunities will grow, because we will conduct the largest deportation operation, sadly, in American history. We have no choice. This is not sustainable. And we got to get the criminals out first. We're going to get the criminals, the murderers, the drug dealers. We're going to get them out of here first. And we're going to work with local police. They know everything about them. They know their names.
Economist Alan William Wolf at the Peterson Institute for International Economics wrote in May, quote, "Unlike the Biden tariffs, the Trump plan is for increased tariffs on all products from all countries. It is not just America first. It is America alone. Politicians and the public here and abroad are getting used to the idea of having higher tariffs, desensitized to the fact that high tariffs ought not to be the new normal. They are, in fact, added taxes on us, and having them will have real costs." Quote. We'll have more on that next week.
Econ Pod.
Now, Trump says he's going back to Butler, Pennsylvania to finish his campaign speech there after shots were fired at him, including one that grazed his ear by failed assassin Thomas Crooks during his July 13th rally. A damning report was released this week by a Senate committee that found major communication breakdowns within the United States Secret Service on the scene, as well as their failing to set up visual barriers around the rally to block potential shooters. The report said the failures were, quote, foreseeable and preventable, quote, and found that many of the problems identified by the committee remain unaddressed by the Secret Service. Vice President Harris was also touting her economic policies this week in key battleground states. She gave these remarks at the Economics Club of Pittsburgh.
He's only interested in making life better for himself and people like himself, the wealthiest of Americans. You can see it spelled out in his economic agenda. An agenda that gives trillions of dollars in tax cuts to billionaires and the biggest corporations, while raising taxes on the middle class by almost $4,000 a year. Slashing overtime pay, throwing tens of millions of Americans off of health care, and cutting Social Security and Medicare. In sum, his agenda would weaken the economy and hurt working people and the middle class. You see, for Donald Trump, our economy works best if it works for those who own the big skyscrapers, not those who actually build them, not those who wire them. Well, I have a very different vision. I have a very different vision for our economy.
A recent NBC poll found Harris's favorability has jumped 16 points since July. That's the largest increase for any politician in NBC News polling since then-President George W. Bush's standing surged after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. The top issues found in that poll were inflation and cost of living at 28%, threats to democracy at 19%, and immigration and the situation at the border at 14%. Harris laid out her Opportunity Economy plan that also includes investing in American innovation and entrepreneurship, something she says sets our country apart from others and needs to be cultivated.
I believe the source of our success is the ingenuity, the dynamism, and enterprising spirit of the American people. To paraphrase, yes, it is, it's our nature. It's our nature. To paraphrase Warren Buffett, since the founding of our nation, there has been no incubator for unleashing human potential like America. And we need to guard that spirit. We have to guard that spirit. Let it always inspire us. Let it always be the source of our optimism, which is that spirit that is so uniquely American.
The next day, Thursday, she and President Joe Biden met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, where she had this to say about the ongoing war launched by Russia more than 2 years ago.
Some of the most important moments in our history have come when we stood up to aggressors like Putin, just as we must today. Indeed, standing with our friends and defending our ideals against tyranny has helped make America the most powerful and prosperous nation in the world. Putin's aggression is not only an attack on the people of Ukraine. It is also an attack on fundamental principles such as sovereignty and territorial integrity. International rules and norms are not some abstract notion. They provide order and stability in our world. They support American security and American prosperity. And when they are threatened anywhere, they are threatened everywhere. History has shown us if we allow aggressors like Putin to take land with impunity, they keep going. And Putin could set his sights on Poland, the Baltic states, and other NATO allies.
Oop, did I hear a little Nikki Haley stump speech at the end there? Well, you can catch her on SiriusXM Channel 111 on Wednesday mornings. I will not be recapping each episode. That's her new gig. That's as much of a plug as you're going to get. It's really just news, not a plug. I also have SiriusXM's the brag.
Wow.
I love it so much. After that meeting, the Biden administration announced an estimated $8 billion in aid for Ukraine, drawing down billions of dollars in military stockpiles from the Pentagon that were at risk of expiring September 30th, providing an additional Patriot air defense battery and expanding training for F-16 pilots, this according to the Hill newspaper. Trump has remained critical of Zelensky, including earlier this week in Mint Hill, North Carolina, where he blasted Zelensky, who had toured a munitions plant in Pennsylvania, a plant that is making bullets for Ukrainian troops. Now, on Friday morning, Trump met with Zelensky and touted his relationship with him and Russian President Vladimir Putin, who has an outstanding arrest warrant issued by the International Criminal Court in The Hague. First, you'll hear Zelensky and then Trump, who, in response to a question about expectations for their meeting, thanked the Ukrainian Prime Minister for how he handled Trump's first impeachment, which centered around Trump withholding military aid to the country and an invitation to the White House in order to influence Zelensky to announce an investigation into Biden, which he did not do.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to have the president with us. And he's been through a lot. He's been through a tremendous amount, like probably nobody else, almost nobody else in history, if you really get right down to it. And we're going to have a discussion and see what we can come up with. But great honor to have you with
us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. Thanks so much for this meeting. Five years passed.
Yeah.
So we had meeting again here in New York in September, and now there are a lot of challenges in Ukraine, United States, and of course I want to discuss with you. I think where we are together, I think we have common view that the war in Ukraine has to be stopped and Putin can't win and Ukrainians have to prevail, and I want to discuss with you the details of our plan of victory.
My honor.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I never even told you this, to be honest, but he was like a piece of steel. He said President Trump did nothing wrong. We had a very nice call. He congratulated me on his victory. You just won. I remember that. He could have played cute, and he didn't play cute. And so I appreciated that. So we have a very good relationship. And I also have a very good relationship, as you know, with President Putin. And I think if we win, I think we're going to get it resolved very quickly. I really think we're going to get it resolved.
I hope we have more good relations.
We're going to have. Oh, I see. Yeah.
But
it takes two to tango, you know. And
for a bit of a read on the campaign trail and how the North Carolina gubernatorial race could impact a must-win state for Trump, I spoke with Winthrop political science professor Scott Huffman on This Week in South Carolina. Take a listen.
This is one of those races where usually the presidential race has coattails and helps the gubernatorial race and down-ticket races. This is one of those strange elections where it might be kind of an up-ticket focus. A lot of people are going to turn out for that gubernatorial race, and a lot of them are going to be voting for Josh Stein, but a lot of them are also going to be voting against Mark Robinson. And to the degree that those, especially the unaffiliateds, and in North Carolina, they register by party, and if you don't register by Democrat, Republican, or third party, you register as unaffiliated. Those unaffiliated people who turn out to vote against Mark Robinson, to the degree they also vote for the Democrat at the top of the ticket, Kamala Harris, it can help her as well. The North Carolina Republican Party is really just struggling at this moment. Even if Robinson drops out, his name remains on the ballot no matter what. And if he does drop out, Republicans have to very quickly name a replacement and then start a massive campaign to say, hey, you'll be clicking the box for Mark Robinson, but you'll really be voting for John Smith.
And is that feasible right now with Robinson saying that he's not dropping out, that he's denying these claims, but also not at the same time trying to get them authenticated?
With Mark Robinson, apparently anything's possible. I really thought I had seen virtually everything, and every election pops up with something brand new and even more eye-popping. So I wouldn't be surprised if Mark Robinson did ride this all the way through, but his money has dried up and his staff are, you know, leaping off the ship.
And it's interesting because it just makes North Carolina so much more in play. Anything that you can deduce from all this, Scott, that it might now be more of a blue state? I mean, somewhat more likely at this point, it seems like.
Well, among the close swing states in the last election, if you kind of look at the seven closest states in the last election that are swing states this time, North Carolina was the only one that went for Trump. And so if that flips it, then that's a big deal for Kamala Harris. But you got to remember, the victories in all seven of those swing states in the last election, if you add up the votes, the margin of victory for each one of those states altogether, it only came to 0.24% of the electorate who decided the election, essentially, although that counts for 17.5% of the Electoral College votes. But every vote counts in a swing state.
Sure does. And now, Scott, pivoting back to South Carolina again, we have no statewide races. We have congressional races. We have state House and state Senate races, all very important in their own right. But when you're looking at results from Election Day in South Carolina, we're talking about our growth in our state. What areas are you looking at specifically for any changes or demographics that maybe reinforce what's already in play?
I'm actually looking for turnout among various demographics. We have a very, very small but growing Hispanic community. I remember from 2010 to 2020, the Hispanic population doubled, but it went from 2.5% to 5%. So it is very small, but to the degree it's growing, it's an important demographic component to keep an eye on. We have also seen a big change in how people turn out based on education. We learned that in the 2016 race about how polling now has to wait for education, W-E-I-G-H-T, for education as well as other demographics. So looking to see kind of in exit polls how that kind of tumbles out. Also interested to see in counties and that have a, you know, extra sales tax penny for roads and how those play out and how changing demographics in some areas might affect more or less than other areas.
And Scott, let's pivot to polling, one of your favorite topics, because you do direct the Winthrop poll. Everyone's glued to polls, national polls, battleground state polls, polls of polls. What do you look for when there's a new poll out? How do you deduce one that's maybe a little bit more valid than others?
First off, if the polling outfit is a member of the American Association of Public Opinion Research Transparency Initiative, then you know they've had to go through a number of elements that have to be publicly shown what their methodology is. Problem is, it takes you 15 clicks to find the methodology from a news story. Some news organizations, CNN is one of them, has a list even more extensive than that, that you have to prove your poll is up to standards before it gets in. Problem with aggregators like 538 is in general, their top polls are really, really good. They can occasionally be gamed by bad polls. And that happened in 2022 with one poll that was a partisan poll systematically off by 7.5% on average and made people mistakenly believe in the red wave that wasn't. So when you're looking for a good poll, let me tell you, news organizations might get it wrong, but they're doing their best to get good methodology. Academic polls may get it wrong, but they are doing their best to get solid methodology. And again, trends are interesting in national polls, but as we all know, you can win the national vote and lose the presidency. It's time to start focusing a lot more on polls in those swing states.
Catch that full episode on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV or watch it Friday nights at 7:30 and Sunday afternoons at 1:30 on ETV. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here, but unfortunately, I think the news is still with us, A.T. Shire.
It's always. We braved elements to come in here and record this for you. Gavin is wearing a windbreaker. You probably heard it the whole episode.
Can you hear it?
He does gesticulate wildly while he reads his script.
If we're in a state of emergency, I have to have this windbreaker on.
I, you know, that's part of my contract. I do not begrudge you that. I let you be you, okay? I'm just letting my boy explore his space, okay?
I have the branded hat, yes. The branded windbreaker, and the branded polo.
He tore his jacket open right there. Yeah. Brandished his chest.
It's a Columbia.
In Columbia, obviously.
OmniTech Shield. Yeah, it really actually does work, unlike some of those windbreaker waterproof jacket.
He's doing air quotes, folks.
You guys know what I'm talking about. You have those jackets.
All right, Gavin, we're trying to keep this tight because you have to run to EMD.
I have to go to EMD for the presser.
So let's go quick.
I want to tell you that last night I was at home. Yes. And I was listening to a couple different spooky pods because it was so spooky outside.
It was Thursday evening.
The storm was rolling through. I'm like, perfect time for spookness. Mm-hmm. I'm embracing spooky season, folks. Listen, you heard her here first. Mm-hmm. The pumpkin spice line is right around the corner.
It's looming large.
So I'm listening to some shows from Nighty Night, mm-hmm. from Spooked, from KQED,
KQED.
The Radio Rental.
Those are getting the official shout-outs, the Gavin Jackson stamps.
I'm telling you, if you guys want some spooky pods, some fun ones, listen to those. But I was listening to the one from Radio Rental, and the guy, it's interesting on that show because they're talking to—
firsthand.
It's a firsthand account interview type StoryCorps thing. Very spooky and cringy. They all survived to tell the tale, but— one guy was talking about a sleep paralysis demon, which I know everyone's always spoofing on. And specifically, I didn't really know that there was one specific one that everyone sees, and that's
called the Hat Man. The Hat Man.
And for the context of this conversation, we'll say Hat Person, because until we have that verified, we're not going to go ahead and just
Gavin,
do that.
Gavin is a journalist.
Thank you. And I have never had experienced sleep paralysis.
No.
Not that I'm wishing it upon myself, but I was listening right before I went to bed, and I was like, maybe I might summon it. I did not.
I do want the listeners to know that Gavin wishes he was bit by a shark. He wishes he was struck by lightning. He wishes he was shot and lived.
But I do not.
Not sleep paralysis. Okay. See, I'm on the other side. Okay. I kind of wish it upon myself because, I mean, it sounds fascinating, first of all, in a terrible way. But also, like I was saying before we recorded this, Gavin, on the top of my wish list for interviews, mm-hmm. is the Hat Man.
Yeah.
I would love to sit him down, or the Hat Person. I'd love to sit them down, interview the Hat Person. See, everyone is saying, who is the Hat Man?
Yeah.
I'm wondering, how are they? I'm
clearly angry about something.
I just like
haunting us all the time.
I like the idea of someone who's just checking in on me at all times, who really knows me, you know? They're in the corner right now. I mean, we just can't sense them in the corner right now.
Yeah, they're always
with
us, obviously.
Do we each have our own Hat Person?
I don't know.
A hat wearer watching us?
I think he travels. Mm. But this one guy, poor guy, had been experiencing sleep paralysis since like his teenage years.
Yeah.
And that just sounds horrifying. So let us know if you experience this. We would love to hear your spooky stories. Listen to South of Spooky again. We're still workshopping some things.
Thanks so much.
But guys, let us know, 803-563-7169. We want to hear your spooky tales as we approach spooky season.
Spin us a yarn. Yeah. 3 minutes or under.
And also tell us what you're listening to, what pods you're listening to this spooky season. Thanks as always for listening to the pod. You can show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or voicemail 803-563-7169. And you can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. Donate, guys. Go donate right now, I tell you. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
And it wasn't like I was a kid obsessed with videography or anything. You know what I mean? I was like, this would be a cool shot.
This is a bird's eye view.
I'd look so good in the shot.
You were just watching a lot of Hitchcock at the time.
Exactly right.